All right, so we're going to look at the 2x2 and the 2x k, or the k by k. The only difference between the two is that you have to do more pairwise comparisons on larger designs, because on a 2x2, you don't really need the pairwise comparison significance tests for those two condition main effects. You can try anything you want to try on that, including voodoo and destruction. Yeah, what's it say? It's set at or? Oh, hell. See, it's set to 75. It's just indifferent to your needs.
Layers.
Layers.
In summer, you need to have layers.
You will, however, have to do the follow-up analyses in SPSS, even on the 2x2, because that's the only way to get the marginal means that are tested by the F-test. Once again, because we're going to consistently use a type 3 sums of squares, each of those F-tests is a test of each effect corrected for all the other effects. Same as in regression. Standard model nowadays. But the consequence of that is that the F-test for the main effects is not a test of the descriptive marginal means. It's a test of the estimated marginal means after correction. And the only way to get that out of SPSS, to get those corrected marginal means out of SPSS, is using the expected marginal means statement for the main effect. And I just want to say that at the beginning, and I'll say it every chance I get, because you see it all the time that people are reporting descriptive means, and you know they're descriptive means because you can calculate them from the cell means. You know they're descriptive means, and they're giving you F-tests, and you know they don't go together. When we do the statistical analysis of a 2x2 design, we are going to have three F-tests, one for each main effect, one for the interaction. The F-tests for the main effects really are comparisons of the marginal means. Which marginal means? Depends upon whether we have an orthogonal design or a non-orthogonal design. If we have equal n, then the main effects and the interaction are orthogonal with each other, and we will be testing those marginal means. If we have a non-orthogonal design, it's just collinearity between the predictors, something we're used to from multiple regression. And what that means is that the bivariate information, here a mean difference, in regression a correlation, isn't carrying the same information as the multivariate. The regression weight in multiple regression, and the corrected marginal means in ANOVA. For some reason, there's always a bit of a disconnect shifting from the collinearity among quantitative variables in a regression, which nobody ever complains about, and the collinearity between non-orthogonal effects in an ANOVA, which seems to make everybody crazy. So statistical analyses necessary to describe the main effects. In a 2x2, the main effects F-tests are sufficient to tell us about the relationship. Each main effect involves a comparison of two. Whether or not these marginal means are significant is all we need to know. If they are statistically significantly different, the bigger one's bigger. The smaller one's smaller. That's all you need for your pointies and your description. Don't forget to examine the means to see if a significant difference is in the hypothesized direction. For the interaction, the F-test of the interaction only tells whether or not there is a statistically significant interaction. It doesn't tell the pattern. To determine the pattern, we have to compare the simple effects. To describe each simple effect, we have to compare the cell means. So we need to know how much of a cell mean difference is statistically significant. The LSD is the most common procedure, because the LSD, you'll remember, is an uncorrected significance test. Each of those pairwise comparisons is taking a 5% risk. That has become the most common analysis. Back in the 70s and the early 80s, we were trying to figure out how to balance type 1 and type 2 error by ignoring the presence of type 2 error and just concentrating on type 1 error and correcting everything, which meant if you had a fairly large design, you might be correcting for 20 or more pairwise comparisons, which means everything had to be significant at the 0.001. Now keep in mind that this is before power analysis hit hard, and people were just running sample sizes that worked great for a P of 0.05, but were coming up way short for a P of 0.001. And suddenly, well-replicated effects, decades old, weren't showing up anymore. It isn't that the means had changed, or the standard deviations had changed, or the effect size had changed. But what had changed was an emphasis on avoiding type 1 error without any attention to increasing type 2 error or even thinking about sample size. And so there's been a give and take back and forth. Most of the research that looks only at type 1 error correctly points out that LSD is a nightmare for type 1 error because you're adding 5% every time you do a pairwise comparison. At best, you're adding 5% every time you find a significant pairwise comparison. Because the argument there is that if you retain the null, you can't possibly make a type 1 error. So you're only really adding risk for your significant pairwise comparisons, which are still substantial and common. The research that followed the advent of interest in power analysis pointed out that what we need is a balance of type 1 and type 2 errors. That there is no such thing as the right follow-up logic. All that you can do is pick your bias. You can pick a type 1 bias or you can pick a type 2 bias. That didn't make anybody happy. And so the question was, what gives us the best balance? And the best balance seems to come from LSD, which is the oldest and the simplest, and it's sort of strange that we settle on something that's reasonable like that. But we have. You're going to need to know some pieces in order to put it into the computator, and sometimes you will need the computator. For example, as we'll see, SPSS will only give you follow-up analyses for adjacent means. They have to be in the same row, or they have to be in the same column. If you're changing both row and column, it's very difficult to get that information out of SPSS. So if you want to make those sorts of comparisons, you're going to have to go find an LSD somewhere else. This is the usual information. The other thing that happens is that sometimes people will publish an article and they won't do all of the pairwise comparisons you wish they had, and you want to go get an LSD to perform on perform further analyses on their data. And so the things that you're going to need are, you're going to need degrees of freedom error for that particular effect. You're going to need the mean square error for that effect, and you're going to need a small n. And small n is not a body count. It's a representation of power. And so you take the total number of data points, you divide it by the total number of conditions, you get a thing called n, and if you get a decimal, you use the decimal. Because again, you're representing power, you're not counting bodies. For the 2x2 factorial design, we will only use the LSD to compare cell means. We won't use it to compare marginal means, and we won't use it to compare simple effects, which is something that you see sometimes, and I'll rail against that here in a few moments. So the point is that if we have this happy little 2x2 design, 5-year-old and 10-year-old boys and girls, we've got 4 statistics available to us, and we have to make sure that we're using the right statistic for each question that we have. And here's a list of the questions framed as effects. So if we want to look at the main effect of age, we're going to compare 30 and 20, and that's going to give us our main effect F-test. If we're looking at the main effect of gender, we want to compare this 25 and 30 with that F-test. if we want to know whether or not there is an interaction, we do the interaction F test. Only after we've decided that there's an interaction and we want to describe its pattern do we use the LSD to explicate the patterns of the simple effects, to describe the pattern of the interaction that we already know we have. This is what you brought up the other day, I think it was. Somebody asked, how do we know if the simple effects are different enough to have an interaction? Nothing in here tells us whether we have an interaction. Whether or not we have an interaction is derived from this F test. The pattern here and the pattern there may be different, but you should find an interaction pattern no matter which one you look at.
And remember, if
we're doing this as coded regression, it's the same regression weight that actually tells us both patterns, even though we might draw really different sets of pointies to articulate that pattern.
So it's for the pattern.
Yes.
Okay.
For effect sizes, anytime you have an F, you can go get a degrees, or you can go get an R. And anytime you have a couple of means and an error term, you can go get an R from the things that are in the computator. You know, I'm not sure I have a link to the computator on this web page. I'll get that put in there. Sorry about that. You can always go get it from 941 or 942. When we talk about larger designs, we're able to add conditions to one, the other, or both of the independent variables. And when we're talking now about a K-by-K design, the rules change, literally. Now we're talking about needing to do follow-ups whenever we have a significant effect with more than two conditions. And that's a reliable rule. That rule holds no matter you're doing bivariate or multivariate. That rule holds no matter how large or small the design. Every significant effect with more than two conditions is going to need a follow-up. For the interaction, again, the F test only tells us whether or not there is an interaction. It does not tell us the pattern. We're going to need some process for comparing pairs of cell means. We're going to use that based on the LSD. The rule is the same. The small n is the total number of people divided by the number of conditions in that effect. Whether that's a main effect or an interaction effect, the same formula works, and that's why I use this formula. There are others that actually use different formulas for different sized effects. Just, it makes my head hurt. This is the simplest thing. Notice that there is a slightly different R for when you have degrees of freedom of one and more than one. So make sure that you're paying attention to which R to use in the computator. And just by adding these two cells, we now have a lot more going on in terms of the questions we can ask. This is the advantage of factorial designs. This is one of the two reasons that, or I would say there's three reasons that factorial designs are so sexy. One, you get to study interactions. Two, you get to check if main effects are descriptive or conditional. Three, the sheer increase in the amount of information you get. We added two conditions and we picked up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more pieces of information. That's a pretty good cost-benefit trade-off. The more conditions we put in, the more information we get. Remember the progression. If you got two conditions, you only learn one thing. You got three conditions, you learn three things. Four, you learn six. Five, you learn 10. Six, you learn 15. It's a huge increase in the amount of information that you get. Now, the downside is that some poor schmuck, probably us, has to handle the increased complexity in the data analysis and the depiction of the data. But once you do a few dozen of these and get comfortable with them, you'll get pretty arrogant. And bring it on. Bring on that 3x4x6. I'll be fine. Because all you have to do is be patient and lay it out. And you've handled way more complicated things than this. So one of the questions is, when do we need follow-ups? And what will our end be? Those are sort of the two sticking points. We want to take a second. So we've got a design here where we have 100 males and 100 females, which we're not going to be able to randomly assign. But we are able to randomly assign them to their instructions, whether to work as quickly as possible, as accurately as possible, as quickly as you can without making unnecessary errors, and no instructions for either speed or accuracy. And so we've got 200 people spread across 8 conditions. For the interaction, we get a P of 0.03. Will we need an LSD, minimum mean difference, to compare the cell means? Now, it doesn't matter if it's an interaction or a main effect. The rule is always the same. Do we have a significant effect with more than 2 conditions? So will we need follow-ups? Ta-da! That's all there is to it. Keep it as simple as you can. And then, what will the N be for that? And so what we're going to do is we're going to take 200 people and spread them across 8 conditions. So the N that we would use is 25. Oh, look, I knew. For the main effect of instruction, we got a P of 0.05. Remember, as we start to look at this main effect, that we have a significant interaction. And whenever we have a significant interaction, we not only have to describe the pattern of the main effect, we have to decide if that description is interesting to us or not. So I got a P of 0.02. For that main effect, am I going to need an LSD to compare the marginal means? Yeah, don't think. It's only one rule. Significant effect with more than 2 conditions, we're going to need follow-ups. What will the N be? The N will be 200 people now spread across 4 conditions. Next question. And notice it's in orange. Orange in this slide is interaction stuff. Will we need an LSD to compare cell means? Why the hell would we have to compare cell means to talk about a main effect? Because the cell means are how we look at simple effects. In order to decide if this main effect is descriptive or not, let me back up and say that again. In order to determine if this main effect of instruction is descriptive or not, we have to look to see if the pattern of the main effect of instruction is the same as the pattern of the simple effect of instruction for both males and females. What this means is that in order for this main effect to be descriptive, we have to have six pairwise comparison match from the main effect pattern to each of the two simple effect patterns. There's a lot of risk that that main effect is not going to be fully descriptive.
Descriptive means that the marginal effects follow the same pattern as the simple effects.
Corresponding simple effects, yep. They don't have to be the same size, but just if I got the main effect and I got the simple effect for males and I got the simple effect for females, that I've got the same pointy. This may be a 10-point effect, a 5-point effect, and a 30-point effect, but they're all effects in the same direction. We have pretty low standards for equivalence. And so, a descriptive main effect with several conditions is a cool thing. Because that's something that you can say, look, let me give you a bunch of information about how these six conditions compare to each other. And by the way, that's going to hold for both men and women. Unconditional, that is, descriptive main effects are wonderful things. Main effect for gender is also significant. Do I need an LSD minimum mean difference to compare the marginal means? No. Two groups. Bigger one's bigger. However, I do need an LSD to compare the simple means to make sure that the general or main effect for men versus women is the same pattern for quick, accurate, both, and neither. So we need a follow-up analysis for every effect that is significant with more than two conditions, and we need a follow-up analysis to check on the descriptiveness of any main effect, significant or not, if there is an interaction. And that's a hard thing to remember, because the trigger point for the follow-up analyses is whether or not there's an interaction, not whether or not that main effect is significant. Last fall, we went out to a local conference, I guess it was a regional conference, hosted by the Nebraska Psychological Society. It was hosted at Doan. We took about 15 of our undergraduates out there who were presenting papers at this conference. We had recently had this lecture because we were doing factorials again, and I sent them on a scavenger hunt, and the scavenger hunt was go find misleading main effects that are not identified and described as misleading main effects. There were only three, hey Becca, there were only three factorial analyses that didn't make that mistake outside of our kids. Over 40% of the factorial analyses had a misleading main effect that wasn't identified. And most of those were gender effects, because gender is fairly easy to study. You can ask, hey, what are you? I can even probably guess. But it was really common that there was a main effect for gender that was either reversed across the two genders or only there for one of them, and they missed it, they missed it, they missed it. That's why I whine about this descriptive misleading thing. Every null main effect that was misleading was not identified as a misleading null. Every freaking one. And when the kids would ask, they were all told the same thing. Well, it's a null. There's no follow-up. Well, there's no follow-up on the means that are null, but there is a follow-up on whether that null happens everywhere. And so that's why the colors on that last page is trying to identify that you've got a lot of stuff to do.